Okay. We were at the presence and non-disappearance condition, right? So presence condition and non-disappearance condition are the same. And they are of five kinds. They are cognizance, pre-nascence, post-nascence, edible food, and material life. Now these two conditions, identical in meaning and differing only in the letter. So they mean the same thing. One is presence and the other is non-disappearance. In this relationship, a conditioning state helps the conditioned state to arise or persist in being during a time when it exists alongside the conditioned states. They must be present at the moment when they are assisting the other states. It is not necessary, however, for the conditioning state and the conditioned states to be cognizant. It is not necessary, but they can be cognizant also. All that is required is for the two to temporarily overlap and for the conditioning state to support in some way the conditioned state during the time they overlap. Sometimes the conditioning state arises before and then conditioned states arise later. Or sometimes conditioning state will arrive later and conditioned states arrive before. But when one is supporting the other, they must be present. When the text mentions only five types of presence conditions, since these five in turn include additional subsidiary types, presence condition comprises a wide variety of other conditions. So there can many conditions can be grouped under the heading the presence condition. This will become clear in the next section, which deals with the subsumption of all conditional relations under the four master conditions. So presence condition and non-disappearance condition are of five kinds, and we have already met them before. So now the manual tells us that all these 24 conditions can be reduced to four conditions. All conditions are included in the conditions of object, decisive support, karma, and presence. Now, in this case, teachers have different opinions. One sub-commentary teacher says that it means any condition can be included in object condition, every condition can be included in decisive support or karma and presence. So that is one opinion. But that opinion is not accepted by many later teachers. So later teachers try to show us which types of conditions could be grouped under which condition. And so in the note it is said that the Lady Shadow explains in some way different from the other sub-commentary. So if you look at the table on page 323, you will see that. Now, under object condition are grouped object predominance, base object pre-nascent support, object presence, and dissociation. And then under decisive support, object predominance, base object pre-nascent support, object pre-nascence, asynchronous karma, dissociation, proximity, contiguity, repetition, absence, and disappearance. And under karma, only one asynchronous karma. And under presence, there are many. object predominance, cognizance predominance, cognizance support, base pre-nascent support, base object pre-nascent support, base pre-nascent, cognizance karma, dissociation, root, cognizance, mutuality, results, nutriment, faculty, jhana, path, association, non-disappearance, and post-nascence. There are so many. And also, the conditions are grouped according to, we may call families. The cognizance family, object family, proximity family, and so on. And then there is a note by the author of the original manual, and that is the word cognizant material phenomena. What does it mean? Now, if he does not define this word in Pali, sahajata rupa, we may not understand it, or we may misunderstand it, we may make mistakes. And so here, the author gave us what he meant by cognizant material phenomena. Because the word cognizant material phenomena was used in describing the different relations previously. So now he defines the term he used, cognizant material phenomena. So that should be understood as twofold. Whenever cognizant material phenomena, this term, is met, then we must understand one of two things. One is, throughout the course of existence, that means after rebirth, they should be understood as those born of consciousness. So, cognizant material phenomena in one sense means only those born of consciousness. Not all types of material properties, but those that are born of consciousness or that are caused by consciousness, and they are in the course of existence, that means during life, after rebirth. And at rebirth linking, as those born of karma. So at rebirth linking, the cognizant material phenomena means material properties born of karma or caused by karma, or that are the results of karma. Now we go to the summary. Thus, the things pertaining to the three periods of time and timeless, internal and external, conditioned and unconditioned, are threefold by way of concepts, mind and matter. That means, now the author has shown us the 24 relations and also how different states are related. These 24 relations can be reduced to just concepts, mind, and matter. And concepts, mind, and matter, that belongs to three periods of time, that means past, present, and future, and also timeless. Now, Nibbana is timeless, and concept is timeless. And then internal and external, and conditioned and unconditioned. All except Nibbana are conditioned, and Nibbana is unconditioned. So all these 24 conditions are just concepts, mind, and matter. So now the author is going to define mind and also concepts in the next section. Now, before we go to the next section, let us go back to dependent origination. And we cannot do these charts, all of them here, but we will take just one link and try to understand. So it is paticca samuppada by way of 24 Patthana conditions. So in the paticca samuppada or dependent origination, the first link is between ignorance and karma formations. Conditioned by ignorance, formations arise, or because there is ignorance as condition, there are formations and so on. So that means ignorance conditions formations. And ignorance means moha in, or moha that is concomitant with 12 akusala chetas, because moha arises with all 12 akusala chetas. And formations means formation of merit, formations of demerit, and formations of imperturbable. Now, formations of merit means chitana or volition concomitant with 8 kama vajra kusala and 5 rupa vajra kusala chetas. And formations of demerit means volition in all 12 akusala chetas. And formations of imperturbable means volition in 4 arupa vajra of immaterial wholesome chetas. So ignorance is a condition for these three kinds of formations. That means ignorance and formations are related. How are they related? In what way, or by what conditioning force? Now here you read the first one, conditioning ignorance, and then the conditioned formations of merit. So formations of merit means chetana in 8 kama vajra kusala and 5 rupa vajra kusala chetas. And then under the conditions you see 2 and 9, and then in the brackets 102. So in order to understand it, you have to have the list of the 24 patthana conditions handy with you. So number 2 means object condition, and number 9 means decisive support condition. So that means ignorance is a condition for formations of merit by way of object and by way of decisive support. And for this information, you can read paragraph 102 in chapter 17 in the book called Path of Purification. The book Path of Purification is the English translation of Visuddhimagga. Now, ignorance is a condition for formations of merit by way of object. Now, that means when you practice, say, vipassana meditation, you may take ignorance as object of your contemplation, object of your attention. You may try to see ignorance as arising and disappearing, as impermanent, and so on. So when you practice vipassana on ignorance, or taking ignorance as object of vipassana, then ignorance is a conditioning state, and your vipassana consciousness is the conditioned state. And also, those who can read the other people's minds, for those, they can take the ignorance of other people as object, and when they enter into that supernormal knowledge and sees or knows the ignorance in the mind of another person, then that ignorance is the condition for his supernormal knowledge consciousness. So in that way, ignorance is an object condition for the formations of merit. And also ignorance can be number 9, decisive support condition for formations of merit. Now you try to diminish ignorance, you try to get rid of ignorance by practicing meritorious deeds, by practicing dana or keeping precepts or practicing meditation. So in that case, the ignorance is the decisive support condition for your merit. So in this way, ignorance is a condition for formations of merit in two ways, by way of being an object and by way of the decisive support. And in order to reduce ignorance, say you try to practice meditation to get jhana. And then when you get the jhana, then that jhana is said to be conditioned by ignorance by way of decisive support or strong support. So in that way, ignorance can be a conditioning state for the jhanas. So here, conditioning state, which is ignorance, and conditioned state, formation of merit, belong to different times or different locations. But next is the ignorance to formations of demerit. That means ignorance to chetana in 12 akusala, 12 unwholesome chetas. Here also there can be number 2, object condition. And there can be aramana dipati, that means predominant, object predominant condition, and also aramana upanisya, object decisive support. Taking ignorance as object, there can arise akusala, unwholesome chetas. So when unwholesome chetas arise taking ignorance as object, then ignorance is the conditioning factor of object for the conditioned state, that is the volition in akusala chetas. And if the object is taken closely, or if the object can exert strong influence on the consciousness, then we can have the aramana adhipati and aramana upanisaya. And also there is number 9 here, again, the decisive support. The former ignorance can be a decisive support for the later volition in one of the 12 akusala chetas. And then there is 4, 5. What is 4? Proximity. Number 5, contiguity. So there can be proximity, contiguity, and anantara upanisya. It is a variety of number 9. Contiguity, decisive support, and 12, repetition, and 22, absence, and 23, disappearance. Now, they can be explained by taking these jhavanas as example. Suppose there are 7 moments of jhavana of unwholesome chetas. With each of the jhavana consciousness, there is ignorance. And there is volition. So, ignorance concomitant with, say, first jhavana is a proximity condition for chetana or volition concomitant with second jhavana, and so on. So there is first jhavana ceases so that second jhavana can arise, and second jhavana ceases so that that javana can arise and so on. So there is this proximity condition between the first javana and second, second and third and so on. And since there is ignorance with all the javanas and volition with all the javanas, now we have these conditions, the proximity condition, contiguity condition and so on. So when there is proximity condition, there is always the contiguity condition, and then 22 and 23, absence condition and disappearance condition. Now number 12, repetition condition, is for wholesome or unwholesome and functional consciousness. Since here we take unwholesome consciousness, the Chaitana with unwholesome consciousness as conditioned state, we get the repetition condition also. And then 1, 6, 7, 8, 19, 21, 24. One is the root condition. Now let us take the first Akusala Chaita. With the first Akusala Chaita, there arise ignorance and volition. So since they arise together, there is the condition of root or root condition between ignorance and volition. And number 6, cognizance. Since they arise together at the same time, there is cognizance. And also number 7, mutuality. And number 8, support. Number 19, association. 21, presence. And 24, non-disappearance. So from this we understand that sometimes ignorance and formations belong to different times and sometimes different persons or different places. But sometimes conditioning state and conditioned state arise together. But one is said to be conditioning state and another is conditioned state, as in 1, 6, 7, 8, 19, 21 and 24. So when you understand Patthana, now you understand fully and correctly about the relationships between the cause and effect mentioned in the doctrine of Paticca-samuppada or dependent origination. So here ignorance is not the producer of formations of merit and so on, but it is a condition. And it is a condition that belongs to a different time. And also with regard to akusala chetas, it is the cognizance group or cognizance condition. That means they arise together and one is called a condition and the other is called the conditioned. So now we understand that conditioned by ignorance, formations arise, means sometimes ignorance and formation may arise together. Although they arise together, one is said to be conditioning and the other is said to be conditioned. Now, formations of the imperturbable, that means volition in the four Arupa Vajra Kusala Chetas. Ignorance to four Arupa Vajra Kusala Chetas. There can be only one, and that is decisive support. That means you see the faultiness of ignorance, and you want to diminish ignorance, or you want to get rid of ignorance, and so you practice meditation, and you attain one of the four or four Arupa Vajra Jhanas. So when one of the four Arupa Vajra Jhanas arise in your mind, then they are conditioned by the ignorance, because you want to get rid of ignorance, and so ignorance serves as a decisive support for your practice of meditation and for your attainment of jhanas. So here, the conditioning state and conditioned state belong to different times. So they can belong to different times, they can belong to the same time, they can belong to the same person, and they can belong to different persons. And that we understand through the knowledge of Patthana conditions. That is why understanding of Patthana conditions is important in understanding correctly the dependent origination. It would be good if we can go through to the end all these, but we have no time, and also it will be very involved, and so I will leave it to you. And if you are interested, please read this chart with the path of purification. So the paragraph numbers are given in the square brackets, and so you can easily go to the path of purification and read about this. Now, it is said that with regard to cause and effect, there are four kinds of views. One is one cause, one result. Second is one cause, many results. The third is many causes, one result. And the fourth is many causes, many results. What does Buddhism advocate? One cause, one result, or one cause, many results, or many causes, one result, or many causes, many results. If we look at it, right, avijja, paccaya, sankhara, and so on, we may be tempted to say that, oh, teachings of the Buddha is one cause, many results. But the commentaries say that the Buddha's teachings is not one cause, many results. Because although ignorance is here stated as a conditioning state, actually it is not the only conditioning state for sankharas. There are other conditions for sankharas to arise. Sankhara means chetana, right? Chetana must have a citta arising so that it can arise. So the citta is also its condition. And then that citta, along with chetana, must depend on the heart base. So heart base is also its condition. So there are many conditions for chetanas or sankharas to arise. So avijja is not the only condition. But here Buddha said avijja is the condition for formations, because it is the chief of them. Or sometimes it is obvious, or sometimes it is not common to others. So in the teachings of the Buddha, we must understand that there are multiplicity of causes and multiplicity of results. So the Buddhism accepts many causes, many results view. Not one cause, many results, and so on. So in Buddhism, only the fourth one is accepted as true. Many causes and many results. So all results may not be stated, but we must understand that here the ignorance is not the only condition for formations, and so on. So with the knowledge of the 24 modes of relations taught in Patthana, we understand the dependent origination more correctly and in more detail and in more depth. Only when you understand the dependent origination with reference to Patthana can you say you really understand the dependent origination. But the author of the original manual treated these two separately, because it would be very involved and it would be very difficult for young people to try to study these two difficult teachings together. So he separated and he treated them separately. But the celebrated commentator, the Venerable Buddhaghosa, when he explained the dependent origination in Visuddhimagga, he explained the dependent origination with reference to 24 Patthana conditions. And a brief description of these 24 Patthana conditions are to be found in the Path of Purification in that chapter, chapter 17, a chapter on the dependent origination. But in the Path of Purification, I don't know why this chapter was given the name Conclusion, not Dependent Origination. So if you open the book, you will not see the header as Dependent Origination, but you will see the header as Conclusion. Maybe it is the exposition of the last item before the practice of Vipassana meditation. Now, Visuddhimagga was written for those who practice both Samatha meditation and Vipassana meditation. So first he explained the Samatha meditation, and then before explaining the Vipassana meditation, he put in these chapters on aggregates, bases, elements, faculties, Four Noble Truths, and dependent origination. And only after that he explains to us the practice of Vipassana meditation. So it is like a concluding chapter on the knowledge necessary for the practice of Vipassana meditation, and so it may be given the name Conclusion. So you will not find heading as Dependent Origination, but it is the chapter 17. Okay, now we go back to the manual. So 24 conditions are reduced to concepts, mind and matter, or concepts, nama and rupa. Now, what are concepts, what is mind, what is nama, and what is rupa? So the manual explains to us here that the material phenomena are just the aggregate of matter. That means the aggregate of matter are the material phenomena. So we must understand the material phenomena of, in Pali, rupa dhamma as rupa khanda. That's quite plain. And then consciousness and mental factors, which comprise the four immaterial aggregates, and nibbana, are the five kinds that are immaterial. Now, please note, here nibbana is called nama. So they are also called name. I think instead of name, we should retain the Pali word nama. So there can be a confusion. Is nibbana rupa or nama? Now we see that nibbana is also nama. It is also called arupa. Arupa and nama. So nibbana is not rupa, but it is nama. But although it is nama, it is not mind, or it is not mental property, not a mental state. It is a different state than nama and rupa. So we must understand this. Now, why are the consciousness and mental factors and nibbana called nama? Now, it is explained down the page, they are also called name. No? The four immaterial aggregates are called nama. in the sense of bending because they bend towards the object in the act of cognizing it. So when you take the object, your mind, as it were, goes to the object or inclines towards the object or bends towards the object. So that bending is what gives this state the name nama. So the word nama means bending or inclining, something that bends, something that inclines to the object. When consciousness takes an object, it is said to bend towards the object. It is inclined towards the object, and jitisikas are the same. They are also called nama in the sense of causing to bend, since they cause one another to bend on to the object. So the word nama has two meanings. One is ordinary meaning, bending, and the other is causal meaning. So nama means one that bends, and the other is one that makes other bend. Now if you remember the section on objects in the third chapter, you will see that consciousness can take other consciousness as object. Consciousness can take mental factors as object. Consciousness can take Nibbana as object. So consciousness can be both subject and object. When you practice meditation and your mind wanders and you are making notes of that wandering mind as wandering, then the wandering mind is the object of your noting mind. So both are mind. One is the object and the other is subject. But subject can be called nama because it bends towards the object, and object can be called nama because it makes the subject bends towards it. So for these two reasons, the consciousness and mental factors are called nama. And Nibbana is also called nama, solely in the sense of causing to bend, for one reason only, not for two reasons. So Nibbana is also called nama because it, as it were, makes chetas and chetasikas bend towards it. That means chetas and chetasikas take Nibbana as object. So when they take Nibbana as object, they bend towards Nibbana. So it is Nibbana making them bend towards it. So Nibbana is also called nama. But we cannot say that Nibbana is mental, because Nibbana is not in our minds and Nibbana is not a mental state. It is a state separate from mind and matter. Although it is not mind, it can be called nama because it causes the mind bend towards it. So we must understand this clearly. Mostly when we use the word nama rupa, we mean only chetas and chetasikas, not necessarily nibbana. But sometimes we may use nama to mean Nibbana also. So when we use nama to mean Nibbana, then we must understand that the meaning of the nama is something that makes others bend towards it, and not something that bends towards others. And then the remaining are concepts. Three are mentioned: concepts, mind, and matter. So now the author has defined matter and he has defined mind, and so what remains is the concepts or panyati, or the concepts. Now there are two kinds of concepts: artha or attapanyati or concepts as meanings and namapanyati or concepts as names. The former are the meanings conveyed by the concepts. The latter, the names or designations which convey that meaning. Now here, meaning does not mean what we understand to be meaning. Now when we study language, say we study English, and then we say, what is the meaning of this word? And we think that the translation is the meaning. Actually, translation is not the meaning of the word, it is the translation of the word. It is the word in another language. It is actually not the meaning of the word. So the meaning of the word means something that is denoted by that name. For example, the word man. So the word man is a nama panyati, concepts as names. It is a name for a being, say, who walks upright and who has 2 feet and 2 hands and so on. But the real man, the being that stands upright and that walks upright and has 2 hands and 2 feet and so on, that being is what is meant by meaning here. Because when we say man, that name represents the being, a man, a human being. So what we call a human being is called attha panyati, concepts as meaning. I would rather call it thing concept, and the other name concept. So the name and the thing that is represented by the name. If you translate the word man to your language, I don't know what you call man in your language. So that will be not a meaning actually. That is, let's say you translate man into Chinese. So the Chinese word will be just a Chinese word. It is not the meaning actually. Now, the real meaning is the man, the being that is called a man. So there are 2 kinds of concepts. The thing concept or meaning concept and name concept. Almost everywhere we can get these 2. Name concept and thing concept. Let's say a house. Now the word a house or the sound a house is a what concept? Name concept. And the building with the roof and walls and windows and so on is the thing concept or meaning concept. So there can be these 2 concepts with almost everything. Here in the explanation it is given, for example, the notion of a full-legged furry domestic animal with certain physical features and traits is the concept as meaning of the term dog. The designation and idea God is the corresponding concept as name. So dog is a name concept, and the full-legged furry domestic animal with certain physical features and traits is the thing concept. I think who wrote this had American dogs in mind. But not all dogs are furry. Okay. Now we have 2 concepts. Meaning concept or thing concept and name concept. And there are 2 kinds of concepts or 2 meanings of the word panyati. The word panyati means what makes known, what makes others known, and also what is made known. So there are 2 meanings to the word panyati. If we call something a panyati, that can mean something that is made known or something that makes known. So the first, there is the explanation of concept is what is made known. What is made known means actually the thing concept. Now, land, mountain, etc. are called in Pali Santana Panyati, formal concepts. That means which a form, since they correspond to the form or configuration of things. Now, a certain configuration of material properties in a certain manner, and that we call the land, or we call a mountain. So the concept land, mountain, etc. are called Santana Panyati, concept of the form or configuration of things. There can be many kinds of concepts actually. And then house, chariot, cart, etc. are called Samuha Panyati, collective concepts, since they correspond to a collection or group of things. Now, house is a collection of different parts, and chariot also is a collection of different parts, and cart also is a collection of different parts. And so the designations or the concepts house, chariot, cart are called collective concepts. They are the collection of some things. And east, west, etc. are called disa panyati, or local concepts or directional concepts, since they correspond to a locality or direction. So east, west, north, south, and so on. Morning, noon, week, month, etc. are called kala panyati, time concepts, since they correspond to periods or units of time. In the manual itself, it is given as named according to the revolution of the moon and so forth. So that means the sun comes up during the day and the moon comes up during the night, and they rotate around the earth. So from the revolution of suns and moons, we say this is morning, this is noon, this is a week, this is month, and so on. So these concepts are called kala concepts or time concepts. And then well, cave, etc. are called akasa panyati, spatial concepts, since they correspond to spatial regions void of perceptible matter. So a well, a cave, we call them a well, a cave, because they have some space. A well has a space, a cave has a space. So that space is void of perceptible matter, you cannot touch the space. So that we call well, cave, and so on. And then kasina signs, that will come in the ninth chapter. Kasina signs are called nimitta panyati, sign concepts, since they correspond to mental signs gained by meditative development. So when you practice meditation, especially the kasina meditation, then you will get the signs, the learned sign and counterpart sign. And so they are called kasina or signs because they are gained by meditation. You meditate on the kasina and you get a sign in your mind. So there are many kinds of concepts, and the list given here is not exhaustive. You can think of many more concepts like this. And in the commentary on Puggala Panyati, there are given altogether, including the six mentioned in the text, there are altogether 24 kinds of panyatis given by the commentators. So there can be many more panyatis or concepts. So this is concept, what is made known. What is made known by the name concepts. So that means we call a thing mountain. So the thing mountain is the one that is made known by the name concept or by the word mountain. When we hear the word mountain, we know in our minds that this is a kind of thing which is a certain a collection of material properties in such a way, and so we understand that that is a mountain. So the things that are denoted by the words are all concepts, what is made known. Now that is another kind of concept, that is concept what makes known. Actually this is nama panyati, or name concept. And that name concept which makes known, which makes others known, is of six kinds. One is the concept of the real, direct concept of the real. Two, a direct concept of the unreal. Three, a concept of the unreal by means of the real. And four, a concept of the real by means of the unreal. Five, concept of the real by means of the real. And six, concept of the unreal by means of the unreal. So in this way we have here six kinds of panyati or concepts that makes known. Now here real means ultimate reality. If it is the name of ultimate reality, it is called the concept of real. And it is a name of thing other than the ultimate reality, it is called a concept of unreal. And then mixture of these two became the number 3, 4, 5 and 6. Now, say matter, feeling. Matter is a name concept. Now the word matter or the sound matter is a name concept. And this name concept is of real or unreal. Matter is said to be an ultimate reality, because there are four ultimate realities. So the word matter or the name concept matter is the concept of real. Feeling, real or unreal, real. So it is the concept of real. You can pick up other names of the Chaitasikas one by one, and all of them are the concepts of real. And then the next one, concept of unreal. Now here land, mountain and so forth, because land is not an ultimate reality. What is ultimate reality is the material properties in what we call the land. So the land itself is non-existent in ultimate reality. So it resides only in our imagination, and so it is unreal. Mountain also, it is unreal. River, unreal. There are many things that are unreal concepts. And then we mix these two together. The rest should be respectively understood by combining both. As for instance, possessor of sixfold direct knowledge, woman's wise eye consciousness, and king's son. Now, possessor of sixfold direct knowledge, which is real and which is unreal? Possessor means a person. A person who possesses sixfold direct knowledge. So a person is unreal. So there is no such thing as a person according to ultimate reality, but just the five aggregates or nama and rupa. So a possessor or a person is unreal, and sixfold knowledge is real. So it is called the concept of unreal by means of real. And then woman's voice, a woman, is she real or unreal? Unreal. And the voice is sound. Sound is real because sound is one of the 28 material properties. So the designation or the name woman's voice is a concept of the real by means of unreal. I consciousness, is I real or unreal? I sensitivity, it is real, and consciousness is also real. So the concept I consciousness is a concept of the real by means of real. And then the king's son, a king is unreal and son is also unreal. So the concept a king's son is the concept of the unreal by means of unreal. So we get these six kinds of concepts that make known, that make others known. So this section is for Nama Panyati, and the previous section is for Artha Panyati. Now comes the summary. I don't know why Bhikkhu Bori didn't give any explanation of this summary. It is an interesting and an important statement. By following the sound of speech through the process of ear consciousness, and then by means of the concept conceived by the process in the mind door that subsequently arises, meanings are understood. These concepts should be understood as fashioned by worldly convention. And there are two verses. So these verses show how we understand things when we hear something. How many thought processes pass before we know what we see is a man, a woman, a cow, and so on. So it is very interesting. We'll have a break now.